Rabbi Brand has given me very strict orders, and Rabbi Brand knows I never listen to him. And so it is my pleasure to give a couple of words of introduction to Rabbi Brand. Since his arrival in Chicago, Rabbi Brand has helped to reinvigorate Torah learning in our community, to make a difference in terms of the character of the religious Zionist community. And as a result, it's a very, very great privilege to have him participating not only in this day, but in so many other things that he does throughout the year to really strengthen the character, the nature of our religious Zionist world. Rabbi Brand is the Rosh Kollel of the Yeshiva University Torah Mitzion Kollel, and very importantly to many of us, he's also a very good friend. Without any further ado, it's my pleasure to introduce Rabbi Reuven Brand.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you very much, Rabbi Metenki. There should be source sheets going around. Precious Rabbi Metenki, Rabbi Engel, many distinguished Rabbanim and many friends. It's a great honor for me to participate this morning, to join together with you as we prepare for the upcoming Yom Ha'Noraim, and especially in the context of this Yom Iyun, L'Zecher Nishmas, Yaakov Levi, who I never had the privilege or opportunity to know, but over the past year since we've arrived, have learned so much and heard so much about, as Rabbi Metenki mentioned in his introductory remarks, about the character and the personality and the dreams of someone who really exemplified in his life, especially as such a young person, so many of the things that we, myself and so many in this room, we hold dear. So it's a great honor to be with you this morning and to share some words of Torah. The other word of introduction that I'd like to, please, with your permission, offer relates to the flyer that some of you saw, as well as to the sequence of speakers. Imagine, and it's something that needs clarification sometimes in different generations and different times. Imagine Rahman al-Islan, somebody we knew was acutely ill with a very unusual illness. So it's an illness that required the attention of an absolute world expert in this particular field. And at the same time, we all have, and we should have, physicians that we know and we probably should visit on a somewhat regular basis. An internist, let's say. So I have, since we came to Chicago, I found a very fine internist. Thanks to Rabbi Engel, when he got sick, I found out who I'm supposed to go to. So it's good to have an internist. But it's also very important to keep in mind that sometimes we should never need such people, but there are, and in our community right here in Chicago, there are some of the world's greatest experts in matters of medicine of all different specifications. So one could get a very unfortunate misimpression when you look at the sign or the schedule of speakers this morning, and I'm not going to speak for Rabbi Yalkut, but I'll speak for myself. It's important to remind ourselves once in a while. I was 16 years old when I left high school, and since I was 16 years old, I've spent the majority of every single day of my career, so to speak, of my studies in a Beis Medrash. But at the same time, one should not confuse that. I have smicha, that I have, with juxtaposition and with an individual who just spoke a few moments ago, who at his age, it's really amazing that he was able to not just teach everything that he just taught, but be able to daven slichas at 1 o'clock in the morning, give a presentation at 9:30. So I'm happy that he's going home to rest a little bit. But it's important to distinguish between a friendly internist who loves to learn with you, who meets you on a regular basis, and someone who we don't often recognize is a world-renowned expert. And we should not conflate those two. The fact that Reuven Brand's picture is on the same sign next to Maran Rav Gedalia Dov Schwartz, it's a nice poster, but we should not conflate the two. And when we have questions and we have issues, that need to be addressed not by a local friendly internist, but by an expert in Jewish law, in a Jewish tradition, and someone who connects us to the previous generation, let it be known that that question is not going to be handled by your friendly internist. Adkan. Okay, so our topic at hand today is to address Rosh Hashanah and try to think about it from a fresh perspective, at least something that for me was a fresh perspective. I'd like to begin in the same theme that Rabbi Schwartz addressed and rewind to think about making Rosh Hashanah meaningful in light of an event that took place 745 years ago. Well, maybe it was 746, we don't know. But it was a Rosh Hashanah drasha that was given 745 or 746 years ago, this Rosh Hashanah. Now, I can't tell you exactly what the nature of the community, the Baal Batim, were who were living, listening to this drasha, but I could show you on a page what kind of Baal Batim they were. The drasha begins on this page. I'll explain to you the volume in a minute. It's Reish Yud Dalet, 214. And the drasha given by this rabbi continues. Now I'm on 217, 219. The rabbis are starting to get nervous. You don't have any congregants, so I'm going to listen to this, right? 225, still going. Same drasha. Drasha la Rosh Hashanah. I'm still going. Reish Lamed Gimel. Now I'm 20 pages into it. You see how the size of the font here. We're going to keep going. I'm just going to spare you the drama. Reish Nun Beis, 252. That's one sermon, man. That is one unbelievable Rosh Hashanah sermon. And it was delivered in Akko. In Akko, either in the year, according to Professor Chevelle, according to historians, in the year 1269 or 1270. It was delivered by a man who was one of the great rabbinic luminaries throughout history, who is an inspiration for me, for many of us in this room, through his scholarship, but also the life that he led. In 1263, he participated in front of King James of Aragon in a disputation, in a debate with an apostate named Pablo Cristiani. The debate went pretty well for him, and he succeeded in surviving this debate, this public debate, which was not uncommon in Christian countries at that time. But when he published an account of this debate, he was sentenced to death. And then later they did him a shtickle favor. They commuted his life to a life expulsion, essentially had to live in exile. So he traveled in 1267 to Eretz Yisrael, and he landed, he arrives, and he writes a letter to describe that he arrives in Yerushalayim, Rav Kodesh. And his name is Rav Moshe ben Nachman, Ramban. Ramban is one of the greatest figures maybe in all of Jewish history in terms of his scholarship, in terms of his contributions in Piyot. He was really a poet in Halacha, in Pirush on his commentary on the Chumash, and on the Gemara. Tons of incredible scholarship and work authored by the Ramban. And one of the things that we can look to for insight and inspiration is kind of the diverse writings of Ramban, because many of us are familiar with his commentary on the Chumash or his commentary on the Talmud, but he wrote many other works, including songs and poems, letters, and four drashos, four sermons that are collected in this classic volume, this classic edition by Dr. Chevelle, called Kisvei HaRamban. It's two volumes. It's also in English. I think there's an English Kisvei HaRamban also. So he has here the drasha that the Ramban gave in Akko after he arrived in the land of Israel, alone, without his family. And it's a fascinating drasha, and he goes through various aspects of the halacha, many of them pertinent to Tekiya Shofar. Even though they appear elsewhere in the Ramban's writings, it's unique to study them in this context. And the Ramban opens his drasha with a question that maybe we never think about. And maybe what we're going to share today is something that's obvious. It's obvious to some, but it's worth reviewing. And if you look on the source pages, if you don't have one, we'll read it out. We have just the beginning opening lines of the Ramban's drasha that he gave in Rosh Hashanah. This drasha must have taken him 4 hours at least, and that was probably talking quickly. The Ramban opens with the verse, and then he's going to spend the majority of the drasha breaking down this verse, what does it mean line by line? But he opens with a general question that we need to address. Vayidabra Hashem al Moshe Lemor. We're going to read this on the upcoming holiday of Rosh Hashanah. Dabrel b'nei Yisrael Lemor b'chodesh hashvi'i. Tell the Jewish people in the seventh month, be'echad l'chodesh, on the first day of the month, yiyeh lachem shabbason. It should be for you a day of cessation, meaning focus. It is zichron trua. It's remembering the trua blast. So he discusses what that means. Mikra Kodesh, a holy assemblage, he discusses what that means. You can break down each one. Komalecha Savoda lo sasu, you do not do work that is burdensome. So this is a matter of debate, whether work in the kitchen is considered work. It's a question. So the way the Ramban categorizes it is that it's not Malechas Avoda. Some of us actually like cooking. It's not called Malechas Avoda. So therefore, it's permitted on Yom Tov. Ve'ekrav temishal Hashem, you should offer a korban. Zuya parsha shel moed hazeh. The Ramban says this is the whole description of this holiday. This is the holiday of Rosh Hashanah. That's what we call Rosh Hashanah. Vehine, says the Ramban, Sivo hakosav shenase yom tov mikra kodesh bayom hazeh. The Torah commanded us to make a holiday on this day, but yet, velo pirish lama v'alma. It doesn't tell us why. So interesting. And then the Ramban goes to explain, which we're not going to take the time to this morning, the Ramban goes to explain each one of the holidays. For example, he says, Chag HaMatzos Tishmor, we eat matzah on Pesach. Why? To remember that we left Egypt in the springtime. We eat matzah when we left. So it's very clear why we're making a holiday on Pesach and why we're doing what we're doing. But if you look in the Chumash, Ramban points out that maybe we never thought about this. During the Kriyas HaTorah, it doesn't actually say why this day is Zichron Trua. It doesn't tell you what motivated Kivyachol, so to speak, what motivated Hashem to give us this Yontif of Rosh Hashanah. Why is this day chosen? And why are we blowing the shofar on this day? And why are we observing anything on this day? So that's issue number one. Let's put that in our back pocket. The truth is that if we think about it more, there's something even more, maybe even mysterious or curious about the holiday of Rosh Hashanah. So yesterday in Shul, someone was talking to me, not being Gavra Lagavra, not in the middle of laying, but he observed, he said, wait a second, shouldn't we, he noticed, not that we would have done it yesterday, he says, you know, he's asking me, he says, you know, there's Birkas HaChodesh, it's Kiddush Levana, well, Birkas HaChodesh in the shul, you announce the new month. A lot of people are careful to come to shul, especially for the announcement of the new month. But he says, he notices, he seems to recall, that there's no announcement of the new month when it comes to the weeks before Tishrei. Right? It wouldn't have been yesterday, it would have been next Shabbos. He says, why is it that there's no mention of Birkas HaChodesh, which is an old tradition to welcome the new month? We're not going to do it this coming Shabbos. So why not? So some could suggest that it has to do about the nature of the day of Rosh Hashanah, which comes to a pasuk that you'll find in source number 2, which this is the pasuk that we're going to say when we make Kiddush on Rosh Hashanah, let's say in the morning when you have Kiddush. It kind of frames the experience of the day. It's not a formal Kiddush, but it gives us the sense. It's also what we're going to say in Shul, if you don't follow the Groz Minog, between the end of Mariv, Birchas Kriyashma, and Shemona Esrei. That's the pasuk. Instead of the Shamru, this is the pasuk you put on. It's a pasuk to Tehillim. Tiku b'chodesh shofar, blow on the month the shofar, b'kese l'yom chagenu. There's a hiddenness, b'kese l'oshon mechuseh, it's covered, it's concealed, l'yom chagenu, for the day of our holiday. So the Gemara has a drasha, Chazal understand. What is the month which is hidden, it's not seen? It's Rosh Hashanah. Because the truth is, you kind of zip through Rosh Hashanah, you wouldn't realize that it's Rosh Chodesh. And that's even a discussion in the Gemara. The Gemara has a discussion, do you mention Rosh Chodesh separately on Rosh Hashanah? In the Musaf, for example, do you mention Rosh Chodesh? Maybe you allude to it with the word Musfei, but it's not really there. It's Bakese, it's hidden. And the question is why? Why is the fact that it's hidden? Why did they just tell us? Well, this is what it's all about. This is the month. This is what it's aiming for. This is issue number 2. The third issue is a very interesting statement from a sefer that I couldn't get a hold of the original. I searched through some online databases, thanks to YU, I have access to certain online databases. So I searched about 127,000 Sfarim by hand. You know, I sat in the library one at a time. There is a Sefer that appears, it was published in 1950s. It's called Sefer HaMoadim. I think the professor's name is Levinsky, Yom Tov Levinsky. You have it. So in this Sefer, Professor Levinsky, he collects like all kinds of fascinating things. Essays from Hasidic masters to secular maskilim to Gemaras and all kinds of interesting things. He collects them there and then he cites them from where they come. So he quotes a certain Likutim Sefer from the teachings of Rav Nachman Mibreslov. So I tried to dig up this original Sefer of Likutim. I was not successful, but maybe it was my inability to find it. So we'll just take it from the Sefer HaMoadim of Professor Rabbi Levinsky. So he has a fascinating teaching from Rav Nachman. Says the holy Rav Nachman Mibreslov, Ikar Kedushas Eretz Yisrael Nizgale Barosh Hashanah. The main sanctity of the land of Israel is manifest on Rosh Hashanah. Fascinating. How do we know this? Kemosha Kosev, as it is written, Eine Hashelo Emelokecha Bo Mereshis Hashanah, and then the pasuk concludes, we read it not long ago, Ar Achris Shana. The eyes of Hashem are in it. Mereshis Shana, or Mereshis Hashanah, Va'ar Achris Shana, until the end of the year. So how do you see that the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael is manifest on Rosh Hashanah? Well, if you look closely, the word Reishis Hashanah contains within it the words Rosh Hashanah. So the question is, what does that mean? Is it just that? Is it just kind of like a cute play on words that it says Reishis Hashanah, it's the beginning of the year? So since God looks at it from the beginning of the year to the end of the year, so it makes sense. Okay, land of Israel, God looks at it from the beginning of the year. Oh, it must be that the main sanctity of the Kedusha on Rosh Hashanah is manifest on Rosh Hashanah. It's possible, it's just a play on words. It's possible that there is another important concept here, which is that very often the Kedusha, the energy and the focus of something is imbued within any particular process at the beginning. This is a bit of a contradictory theme in Judaism, because on the one hand, let's say before Ne'ilah, very often the rabbi will get up and he'll read from the Mishnah Berurah and he'll say, Hakol holech acharachisim, everything follows how you finish, and you got to finish strong and don't pass out and make sure you daven and say what you mean. So you're right, there is something to closing, but there's also something to the beginnings. Based on how you set the trajectory at the outset, that's how everything is going to follow. So that's another level of understanding, but maybe there's a deeper level of understanding, trying to understand what Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, which is something which is animating the Mizrahi, and what is something we're mindful of all the time, how that plays into experience of Rosh Hashanah. And then the last question, the fourth, has to do with the Slichas that we're saying right now. So many of us got up either in the middle of the night last night, stayed up late in the night, woke up early this morning. So we're going to be saying Slichas now until Erev Rosh Hashanah, until we start Rosh Hashanah next Sunday night. So why do we say Slichas starting on Saturday night? But every year you always have to start Slichas on Saturday night, and that's why the first Pismon, for those who said Slichas, when they say the responsive sections, these little paragraphs, so the last one is B'motzo'ei Menucha. In the end of the resting day, meaning you always start, the first day of Slichas is always B'motzo'ei Menucha. That's why, if you go into any shul, let's say I grew up in a Hasidic shtibel, so I daven Nusach Polin, and the place where I daven last night, they do daven Nusach Lita, but the first night the Pismo is always the same. Doesn't matter what Nusach you daven, doesn't matter what shul you're in. I don't know about Sfaradim, I can't speak for Sfaradim, but whether it's Chassidim, Misnagdim, everybody always says the same Pismo the first night of Slichas because it's B'motzoi Menucha. It's always Saturday night. You always say Slichas on Motzoi Shabbos. So why do we start last night? Why don't we start next week? So there's a discussion, the Shulchan Aruch, that based on the discussion already from the times that we've shown in the early commentaries, you always need at least 4 days of Slichos. So why do you need 4 days of Slichos? So there are different observations that are offered. And it's because you need 4 days of slichos that we had to start slichos last night. Because if you're going to always start slichos on a Saturday night, on a Motsoi Shabbos Kodesh, if we were to start slichos this Motsoi Shabbos, we wouldn't have 4 days of slichos. So we have to have this, we have to start last night, so we're going to actually have, I think this is, what is it, 6 or 7 days of slichos. You don't say slichos on Shabbos, obviously. Because you have to have, you can't have less than 4 days of slichos. So why not? So one suggestion is, there's a Gemara that discusses in Gemara Maseches Pesachim, you know why you need, the Gemara is in the following context, and this is what some observe. You know why you need 4 days of slichos? Because in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, there was a concept in Kodshim regarding korbanos called Mikcho Mi Be'asor, taking the Korban Pesach on the 10th day. Where does that come from? It comes from the Pasuk, where the Moshe Rabbeinu was told that it's supposed to take the Korban Pesach in Egypt on the 4th day, on the 10th day, and then 4 days later they're going to Shechta, they're going to slaughter it for the Korban. So they take it on the 10th, they have the sacrifice on the 10th till the 14th. So how many days do you have the Korban with you? 4 days. And the Gemara discusses this further in Pesachim as to whether or not it applies to other sacrifices, whether it applies to the Korban Pesach for many generations. But the idea is that you examine, you set aside that Korban to make sure that it's proper, that it's fit for 4 days in advance. So that's one reason that some suggest that later in the centuries, that's why you need 4 days of slichos. Why? Because you need 4 days of bikur, examination. So we want to make sure we have at least 4 days to focus before Rosh Hashanah. We really need to focus. You know, Chodesh Elul was supposed to be focusing, but that's not so easy. Sometimes Chodesh Elul, like this year, it falls out in the middle of summer vacation. You could be in Wisconsin in the middle of Elul. Who knows? So we have 4 days of at least focus. But then there's another approach. And that is, there is a halachic concept. It's an honest-to-goodness halachic concept called Aseres Yemei Tshuva. 10 days of tshuva. 10 days of return. Returning to the Ribbono Shel Olam, returning to ourselves. So you're supposed to have 10 days of tshuva, and for that reason some have the practice of learning, studying the 10 chapters of the Rambam's Maimonides Hilchos Tshuva, the laws of tshuva that's broken into 10 chapters. You could do one every day. But the problem is that for many pietists, they would observe fast days for the 10 days of tshuva. Because part of tshuva, especially in the tradition of the Hasidei Ashkenaz, of the Germanic Rishonim, was fasting. The problem is that on a simple year, you don't have 10 fast days. Why not? You got 2 days of Rosh Hashanah and Shabbos. And on some years, you have 2 Shabbosos, depending on how it falls out. So it's possible that you could have 10 days of tshuva, but not 10 days of fasting. So for those who would fast for Aseres Yemei Tshuva, they wanted 10 days of fasting. I don't know today, it's not so common that people are very excited about looking for more opportunities to fast. But it's not so long ago. There is a book by a very, very unusual personality in Israel. It was translated to English. It's called As Long As I Live, Es Haleich. So he's a man, he lives in Israel, he's the head of an insurance company, and he tells his life story about how he battled a polio as a child growing up in a far-flung moshav in Israel. It's an unbelievable book. And then after polio, being in an iron lung for and a sanatorium for a couple of years, he then was a cancer survivor twice. It's an unbelievable story. But he describes how his father, who was a Hasidic Holocaust survivor who came to Israel and lived on this moshav, would fast regularly. That was his practice. He would fast regularly. I think it was even Monday and Thursday, or just Monday. So there were even in this generation people who would fast. It's a high level of piety. So people are looking to fast for 10 days, Aseres Yemei Tshuva. So they're missing out because they can't fast on Rosh Hashanah. That's why Paschim, you're not allowed to fast on Rosh Hashanah. You can't fast on Shabbos. So you want 4 more days of fasting. So you always start with the slichos and the fasting from the Motzei Shabbos before. But here's the problem. When the Gemara says, Dirshu Hashem b'imatzo, when it says that there is a time, the Aseres Yemei Tshuva, the 10 days of return, it counts 10 days from Aleph Tishrei, the first day of Tishrei, until the 10th day of Tishrei, which is Yom HaKippurim. That's 10 days, right? The problem is that it's difficult to understand how you can count Aleph Tishrei as a day of Tshuva. So the Rambam tells us, for example, in the beginning of the laws of tshuva and hilchos tshuva, exactly what vidui is, confession. We're not going to talk today about the relationship between confession and tshuva. That's a whole separate discussion. That's an interesting discussion. But in the beginning of the second chapter, the Rambam says, umahi tshuva, the halacha base, what is tshuva? So he tells you exactly that a person should abandon what they did wrong, they should remove it from their mindset, and they should have the conviction to say they will never do it again. They should think that. And v'tzarech lizvados b'sfasov v'lomar inyanos elu shagam v'libo. A person has to verbalize these principles. So the problem is, I look on Rosh Hashanah, I open the machzor, I don't see anything about tshuva in the machzor at all. There's nothing. The Rambam says a person has to articulate verbally that he's going to remove the misdeeds from himself. Doesn't say that in the Rosh Hashanah Machzor. There's no Al-Khayt. That's what you expect. You expect Al-Khayt. You expect Al-Shamnu. That's vidui. That's essential, the Rambam says. V'tzarech lizvados b'sfasav. And yet, it's totally absent. So how could it be that we count Rosh Hashanah as one of the Aseres Yimei Tshuva, but there's no tshuva there? So these are the questions that we can perhaps put together. Number one, we wanted to understand a suggestion to the Ramban's question of why is it that the Torah does not give us a framework, a concept of the reason for Rosh Hashanah. There's no context, it is. Number two, the fact that Rosh Hashanah is Bakesa, it's hidden. There's something mysterious about it. Why is it hidden by design? Number three, the Holy Rav Nachman's teaching that Rosh Hashanah is the expression of Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. And number four, this question that many Darshanim have asked, how could it be that Rosh Hashanah is one of the Aseres Yimei Tshuva? So to address all of these issues, we look at one mizmor that we've been saying day in and day out in the shul, and many of us at home. That's the next source on the page number four. It's Mizmor Chav Zayin in Tehillim. L'David, says David HaMelech, Hashem Ori V'yishi. Hashem is my light and my salvation. Mimi Yira, from whom shall I fear? Hashem Ma'oz Chayai Mimi Efchad. I have no worries. This passage, L'David Hashem Ori V'yishi, this is what we're going to be saying from the beginning of Elul all the way through Hoshana Rabbah. And it has something to do with this time period. And we can find many different references. There is one acronym about the intensity of this period. Aryeh Shoag Milo Yira, says the Navi. The lion roars, who won't be afraid? Aryeh, Aleph, Resh, Yud, Hey. Aleph is Elul, Resh is Rosh Hashanah, Yud is Yom Kippur, Hey is Hoshana Rabbah. That's the period that we're in right now. Aryeh Shoag Milo Yira. So during this period, from Elul until Hoshana Rabbah, we're going to be saying this Mizmar. And what is the Mizmar describing to us? It's describing to us something about how we're supposed to feel during this period of time, an orientation that we're supposed to think about. It gives us an anchor, a spiritual anchor in the morning and then at night, whether it's after Mincha or after Maariv. So there is a Medrash Rabbah that appears here in number 5, that describes at length what the meaning of these verses are on the David Hashem. So one of the descriptions, Rabbanan Pasrin Kra, B'Rosh Hashanah V'Yom HaKippurim. The rabbis, they are poser. They open up for us. They reveal the secret. They explain to us that this verse, L'David Hashem Ori V'Yishi, is referring to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Ori b'Rosh Hashanah v'Yishi b'Yom HaKippurim. My light on Rosh Hashanah and my salvation on Yom Kippur. So my salvation, I understand very easily. We're drowning, so to speak, sometimes. We feel as though we're in an ocean of misdeeds. We've totally lost our way. And the fact that the Ribbono Shel Olam, God, gives us a fresh start, the fact that he throws us a lifeline and says you can start again tomorrow and just leave it all behind, that's the biggest salvation. That's the greatest salvation we can experience. So Yishi and Yom HaKippurim. But what does it mean that it's Ori B'Rosh Hashanah? perhaps what this medrash is trying to teach us has to do exactly with this word that can literally illuminate all of the questions that we asked and give us a greater understanding and create more meaning for us this Rosh Hashanah. And that is the difference between darkness and light. And what do I mean by that? Imagine I walked into this room and it was last night. Everybody was sitting here for whatever reason. I don't know why everybody was here Motzei Shabbos. Everybody was here in this room. It was last night, but it was completely pitch black. And I walked into the room and no one was speaking. And I walked up, imagine, I was just practicing. I was practicing this talk. So I came into the room. I didn't know anybody was here. It was pitch black. So I figured I'm stretching. You know, I'm loosening my tie. Now it's not loose. I was loosening my tie, making jokes. Who knows what I'd be doing? And then all of a sudden, somebody goes to the back of the room and they flick on the lights. And all of a sudden I see there's a room full of people. Perhaps that's the aura of Rosh Hashanah. What does that mean? It means that we go through life and we're in a world which is dark. What do I mean it's dark? We're not living in the dark ages. It means the following. We say on Rosh Hashanah, Hayom Haras Olam. Today is the birthday or the conception of the world. Olam. Well, the word Olam shares another root with a root, the same root with another word, which is Ne'alam, hidden. The Rabbeinu Shlomo, for whatever reason, to give us, to help us, he says, I'm going to do an experiment. I'm going to step back all those years ago, and I'm going to create an opportunity. I'm going to create a little space, an empty space right here, because I'm perfect, the Kaviyachol. The Rabbeinu Shlomo, God is perfect. But perfect, in a certain sense, Rabbi David Aaron has a great book. What's it called? I forget which he has it in. The Secret Life of God, that's what it's called. So he makes this observation. He talks about it from a philosophical joke standpoint. I'm not a philosopher, so I don't find it funny, but apparently philosophers think this is a funny joke. Can God create a rock that he can't lift? Dr. Cahan, he's a math genius, so he's thinking, I don't know, it's back and forth. But I don't know if it's funny. I don't think it's funny at all. Can God, so the question is, can he create a rock that he can't lift? So, well, if he can't create it, then he's not God if he can't lift it. So Alpi Kabbalah, he points out, that's not the equation. It's yes and yes. There's two different things. There's different perspectives. The Rabbeinu Shlomo Kiviyachol, God himself is perfect. But that's static. What about becoming perfect? Perfecting something. So God said, let's have an experience. Let's do an experiment. Let's create a big space where there's going to be he'alem, hiddenness of God. You won't see me. There's going to be an olam, which is ne'alam. God is hidden. We're going to create this space. Hayom haras olam. We're going to make this space. It's the birthday of the world. And we're going to put it out there. Everybody's going to try to figure it out. What are we going to try to figure out? How to bring godliness into the world. We're going to try to figure out how to bring the Rabbeinu Shel Olam into the world. L'sakein olam b'malach l'shakai. To bring godliness into the world. So what's happening is that we're living in a ne'alam, in a hidden world. We're living in a world that the lights are off. No one sees God. I find it interesting sometimes, very often the minyan that I daven in the past years on Rosh Hashanah, the minyan is on that side of Hamelin, and it's on this side of the street. So I'm standing in my row, and I can see out the windows, sometimes when the shades are drawn a little bit, I can see out the window there are cars driving by. You ever imagine if one of those cars stopped and looked in what we were doing in there? They'd see a group of men, they wouldn't see the other side of the mechitza, maybe they'd look carefully, they would see a group of men sometimes, like on a Monday morning, let's say at about 11:30, clear the chairs off and fall down on the floor. It's like an unbelievably strange thing. It's such a disconnect. Like the world out there, they're driving on. I think about that sometimes. So I'm standing in the shul, like, they're driving on. It's just an ordinary day. It's ne'alam, it's hidden. So what's our challenge and what's our opportunity on Rosh Hashanah? The Rabbeinu Shalom, God says to us, Chevra, turn on the lights for one day. Let everybody else drive by, because they're not seeing it, because it's dark outside. And at least for us right now, in Emirat Hashem, as the world develops, we're going to open the doors, let everybody else see the light. But just turn on the lights one day, and realize that you're close to God. Realize that God is with you and is with us all the time. We just don't see it because it's dark. We're living in a dark world. Rosh Hashanah, Ori B'Rosh Hashanah, we turn on the lights, we recognize that the Ribono Shel Olam is there, that we are standing in front of Hashem. It's an amazing Torah from the late Lubavitcher Rebbe. I gave you a little snippet here on the bottom of the page. The Rebbe in a Sicha from Tav Shin Yud Aleph. It's an awfully long time ago, 64 years ago, from Parshas Nitzavim, this week. You know, Chabad, they're prolific publishers, so one of these Kuntrasim, which it says, Bilti Muga, the Rebbe didn't review this Sicha, but the Rebbe begins, Yisib Likutei Torah Reish Parshas Nitzavim, Shepar Shazu Koren La'olam Kodem Rosh Hashanah, Umarumas B'milas Hayom, Dekoy Al Rosh Hashanah. When we say, what we're going to read in this week's parasha, Atem Nitzavim Hayom, Kulchem, Hayom says the Zohar HaKadosh in Parshas Yisro, Hayom means Rosh Hashanah. Says the Rebbe Zichrono Livracha, that's why we read Nitzavim always before Rosh Hashanah. Ki zeh Hayom Tchilas Maaseh HaZichrono LeYom Rishon, we always read it before, because Hayom is Rosh Hashanah. What are we going to say? Atem Nitzavim Hayom Kulchem? What's the next words? Lefnei Hashem Elokeichem, before God. Hayom on Rosh Hashanah, you are Lefnei Hashem. You are before God. That's the whole thing about Hayom. That is what it means to live with light, with open eyes. Ba'or panecha yahaleichun. To open our eyes, to have the light on and realize that we are standing before Hashem. You know, the next challenge is what Rashi said in yesterday's parsha. And that is that the word Hayom, Rashi says twice, means every day. Hayom means every time we wake up today, today we're also lifnei Hashem Elokecha. All right, that's a high level. Let's not go for that yet. But let's focus on Rosh Hashanah. Ori B'Rosh Hashanah means the lights are on. I realize that I am Nitzavim Hayom Lefnei Hashem Elokeichem. I'm standing before God. So now I can understand, perhaps, how all the pieces fit together. Let's talk about Rav Nachman. What is the Ikar Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael? It's the concept of being Lifnei Hashem. Now, there are so many questions. Do we want to go to Israel, like Gemara says in Sota, because we like marzipan, rogalach? Do you want to go because we like shawarma, lechem, peiros? Nah, that way. And what about because we want to do mitzvahs? Well, many of the mitzvahs we can't do. Some of us aren't farmers. So why are we going to Eretz Yisrael? Why is it so important? L'sakin olam malchus shakai, to be lifnei Hashem. So if the purpose of Rosh Hashanah is to set a frame for ourselves that we take one day and just focus on being lifnei Hashem, realizing that we are lifnei Hashem, so that's, in a certain sense, that's the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. But that's also the challenge. Why is it, perhaps, that the Torah did not tell us why Rosh Hashanah exists? Because it's up to us. If Hashem would tell us that He's here, then it unraveled the whole purpose of the day. The whole purpose of the day is turn on the lights. Realize that Hashem is in your life, that He's right next to you all the time. So if the Torah would tell us that, it would have given away the whole thing before. So therefore, it's bakese. You have to find it out yourself. You have to be dorishit. You need to make it happen. We need to turn on the lights. We need to realize that God is with us. That's the avoda, so to speak. That's the goal. That could be one avenue of focus on Rosh Hashanah. The whole point is to realize that we're in front of Hashem. The Torah tells us why we eat matzah, because otherwise, if you just ate crackers that had been baked 4 months ago that didn't taste like much, it wouldn't have any significance for you. So it has to tell you, observe Pesach because of this reason. But on Rosh Hashanah, perhaps, it doesn't tell us, because that's the whole thing that we're supposed to be figuring out. That's the whole mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah, is to be hayom, is to be conscious of the fact that Hashem is with us. The lights are on, that God is here. That's why it's bakese. And maybe this is also why Rosh Hashanah is from the Aseres Yimei Tshuva. It is part of the process of Tshuva. The Rambam, in one of his unique passages in Hilchos Tshuva, where he talks about the shofar, the Rambam describes, Afal pi shetkiyas shofar b'Rosh Hashanah gzeres hakasav, even though the blowing of the shofar is a decree by Hashem, meaning it doesn't say in the Torah why, and there are hidden secrets. We blow the shofar because it says we blow the shofar. Remez yeshba. There's a hint to why we blow the shofar. And the Rambam says why. Kolomar. Uru, uru, yishenim yishenaschem. Wake up. Wake up, sleepy ones, from your slumber. V'hakitzu nirdomim betardimaschem. And wake up, the schluft ones, from your deep sleep. V'chipsu v'maseichem, introspect. V'chizru b'tshuva. And return in tshuva. So what do we do? V'chizru b'tshuva, says the Rambam. V'zichru borachem. Remember your Creator. The first step in tshuva is v'zichru borachem, is to recognize that we stand before Hashem. So many times in Yom Kippur we're going to say Al Chet Shechatanu Lefanecha. So I have this old, growing up, my father had, so now I have one. They must have been published in the 70s. This Vidui pamphlet they used to have when I was growing up. So they had these Vidui pamphlets. So I think in Milfanecha they always say the whole idea is Al Chet Lefanecha. That we made this mistake before Hashem, that makes it so much more significant. Rav Meir Tversky, one of the Rosh Yeshiva in YU, he pointed out on a few occasions, that's why the concept of busha, of guilt, of feeling a sense of guilt and being ashamed of what we did, not in a negative component of shame, in a positive, growth-oriented component of shame, is so important for tshuva. Because if nobody was here, and I was, I don't know, the whole community was empty and I went to Burger King down the street, so maybe I wouldn't feel shame. How could I not feel shame? If God is with me, if the lights are on and I realize that God is all there all the time, of course I'm going to feel a sense of shame. So whenever we do Vidu, whenever we recite Vidu, we're always supposed to feel a sense of busha. The Rambam says earlier, bushti v'nechlamti, I'm ashamed. Most of the times that I do things wrong, no one ever sees it. So why am I ashamed? I'm ashamed because zichru borachem, I realize that I'm standing before Hashem. God is a big part of the process of tshuva. It's an important thing to remember. So perhaps that is the answer to why Rosh Hashanah is part of the tshuva process. Because unless you turn on the lights and recognize that Hashem is with you, that the spark of the neshama that's inside of us, the tzelem Elokim that animates us, it innervates us all the time, is there, then the tshuva process can't get even started. You have to start, says the Rambam, with zichru borachem. So to summarize, we began with this very basic question of the Ramban as to why it is that on Rosh Hashanah, the Torah, in its original, doesn't tell us what everything is supposed to be about. And now we can come back and say that the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, the challenge of building a state of Israel, is to build a state where you realize that the lights are on and God is there. Ein Hashem Elokecha Batamid. The challenge for our lives, wherever we live, is to try to live Beves Hashem with the lights on in an inspired way. Kol Yemei Chayai. We should be Zochet to a Shana Tova. Thank you.